The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, well done Bradford, and load up on pitchforks, torches and yokel hats, we're off to Castle Arson to confront mad Professor Wenger and his hideous creation after Gunners perform like headless chickens in Bantam's battery. Elsewhere, there's more midweek cup fun. World Clubs Cup. Monterrey score late in Orient, but Chelsea still go through to the final with Corinthians on Sunday. What awaits them there? We've got the extraordinary business of what happened at the Morumbi Stadium in Sao Paulo. We've got Asher's Q&A, pitch-sized Sid, and of course a bumper weekend Premier League preview. All of that plus posts and tweets in today's Football Weekly Extra. Right. On board today, a top panel, only one of whom has his head in his hands right now. Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
Hi there. Yeah, slightly later than usual, because we've been watching the action from the Far East with Barry, John Ashton and Paul McKinnis. Hi, Paul.
Hiya.
Hi, John.
Hello.
A lot of excitement about you being on board.
Really?
You with your crazy out of school activities.
Such as?
Well, where were you last night, John?
Last night I was at a homoerotic production of Clockwork Orange.
Again?
At the Soho Theatre, yeah. And at the weekend I was at ATP, down with the kids. I've been all over the cultural meets of our...
What's ATP?
Oh, All Tomorrow's Parties. It's a music festival at Pontins.
Right.
It was good.
Did you blend in, John? What happened?
Oh, yeah. It wasn't. There weren't that many kids there. To be fair, the standout moment was a father and son duo. The father, who was an 80-year-old Frenchman, who played sort of flamenco guitar, and the son played.
He wasn't in a cravat, was he?
I can't remember. He
did
might
you
have
talk
had
about
a cravat
football on. At all? Sounds very familiar.
And his son, who played the cello in a variety of wild ways.
Oh, that's cool.
It was that kind of thing.
All right. And how was last night's homoerotic performance of A Clockwork Orange?
Very good, yes. Very powerful.
Was it avowedly homoerotic, or was that just the subtext that you read into it?
It was pretty, you know, in your face kind of stuff. And in many other parts, not of myself, but of the other actors.
Oh, really?
The violence was kind of... it was a full male cast, and the violence was kind of was very sexual, and everybody was sort of half naked almost all the time. I'm not selling it very well.
I think you are.
It's very good.
That's right up our listenership street, actually, probably. Paul?
Yeah, I've not seen that, because I was going to say, because, you know, there is a kind of central kind of streak of sexual violence against women in that book, stroke movie, isn't there?
Mm.
So,
right. Don't talk to Barry about stroke movies. He'll have entirely chuckle. Yeah. Anyway, now moving along, Barry. Big story of the week. Is it Arsenal? Is it?
I suppose it is. Yes, yeah. Arsenal getting beaten by a League Two side in the Capital One Cup quarterfinal, and they sent out a full strength team, so it couldn't be argued that they weren't taking the game seriously. And the Bradford City skipper has now added insult to injury by saying that Torquay had given them a tougher game.
There was no need for that, I felt.
I don't know if he was on a wind-up or if it's a genuinely serious observation on his part. But either way, it was very embarrassing for Arsenal, and they've obviously been capturing all the headlines, some of which Bradford City probably deserved for a fine defensive performance, and they were well worth their win. It wasn't a fluky cup upset. They thoroughly deserved to win that match.
Hey, how good are they at penalties?
Is it 9 in a row or something?
It is 9 in a row. Put this win in perspective for us, John. Well, how massive an achievement, if you like, was this for Bradford, for the Bantams?
Clearly it was a huge achievement. If you look at the decade that club have had and the problems they've had over the past few years, just trying to get out of that bottom tier where they've had a succession of managers, a succession of financial problems. A team is the usual sort of lower league blend of sort of journeymen and youngsters. And
is this Bradford? Not, yeah.
And as Baz said, yeah, it was they were really impressive, particularly in the first half. And then the last sort of 25 minutes, they struggled to sort of get out. And finally, it kind of... the storm broke, if you like. Although it wasn't all that much of a storm. It was kind of like a squally rain that finally broke. And they were thoroughly worthy of their semi-final spot, absolutely.
Good for them. Paul?
I just think that bit of banter from the Bantams about Torquay being easier is kind of telling, I think, because that's the sort of character, if you can call it that, that Arsenal distinctly lack. It's that sort of old school, up on atom, wind them up, lad thing, which can go so wrong in so many ways, but ultimately binds a lot of teams, professional football teams, together. And Arsenal just don't have any characters like that anymore, and that's a big, big problem, I think.
Mm. Well, they've also got nobody up front who's any good as well.
That's not even Jovinho.
Did you see Jovinho's miss?
Ooh. It was astonishing, wasn't it? Mm. Properly astonishing.
It was, again, were that miss to have taken place in various Latin countries, I would have felt very, very strangely about it, because it would have been more natural for him to have hit the ball. It almost seemed he withdrew his leg so as to avoid putting it into the net. But it didn't take place in one of those Latin countries. So now, interesting is that the big story at the moment around Arsenal seems to be that the Steve Bould experience is going very, very wrong, that Arsene's got the hump about Steve Bould having taken credit for some things early on in the season, and he's not allowing him to take defensive training anymore. All of a sudden, this is all over the place.
They've got problems all over the pitch, but it seems, as John says, that really the most obvious problem on the field right now appears to be in the final third, where they've traditionally been so effective.
But what about people like Vermaelen, who had such a cracking time of it last year, and this year looks anything but?
Well, he didn't really have a cracking time of it last year, did he? He was not out for quite a while through injury, yeah. And you might say that actually coming back since that injury, he's not quite been the same player. But yes, he doesn't look confident. He gets turned too easy. Same problem as afflicts Mertesacker, which is a big, big thing.
One would presume if Wenger and Bould aren't getting along and aren't able to work together, then the solution is for one of them to leave. And you would presume Bould would be the one who would have to go. And that's something Arsenal need to think about, clearly, if if it is an ongoing problem. I mean, the problems at Arsenal stretch from the boardroom down. The boardroom seems to be full of sort of fusty old men covered in cobwebs who aren't that interested in winning trophies or
and brash young American execs as well.
Yeah, and the way things are going, it looks as if those people will be happy for, you know, at the lap of honour at the end of the season for the accountants to come out and sort of wave the balance sheet in front of the adoring crowd. But the crowd won't be too adoring if that happens.
There is a problem about that, though, that so much money has also been wasted in transfers. I mean, we've already said Jovinho, but at Oxlade-Chamberlain, the price they paid for raw potential that's going to need 4 years to develop at least.
Last year, they did bounce back from a disastrous spell, but it does seem difficult to see that happening again. Or do you think in a couple of months we're going to have an entirely different perspective?
I think I said that last time I was on, so apologies for repeating, but I think it's cyclical and they will get better. They'll have a good run again. They'll be in and about fourth place, but it won't change the fundamental problems.
We're a long way back from it at the moment. There's a lot of competition for those top four spots, John.
Well, you said they're only 2 points off fourth.
Oh, God, they are.
Which is kind of like, you know,
Matt, stop, back to
it. No, isn't that part of the thing? It's like, it seems like it's awful and it seems like everything is sort of falling apart at the club. And then you look at the league table and think, oh, hang on a minute, they're only 2 points behind Everton in fourth.
Yeah, but put it another way, they're only 2 points ahead of Liverpool. No, but it's a fair point you make. Still, let me ask you this. They're at Reading on Monday. Reading, of course, put 3 past Man United recently there. What if they were to lose that game, the Gunners? Where would they be then?
But didn't Reading put 6 past Arsenal the other week?
In the League Cup. Absolutely, a rematch of that extraordinary game.
But the other side of that scoreline was also fairly noticeable in that Arsenal scored an awful lot of goals as well.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll lose there.
Arsenal?
Yeah.
Reading have lost their last 5 matches in the Premier League.
I think it might be a problem.
But they're due a win, surely.
But they haven't. But they've only had one, I think, and I wonder whether the steam is beginning to run out, that kind of enthusiasm that you get at the beginning of a season following promotion.
Let's check with Barry's Bones. Barry's Bones.
Barry's Bones very much say an Arsenal win, an emphatic Arsenal win.
All right.
I mean, I think the problem, if Barney was here, he'd put down his apple and sort of flounce back in his chair and say that Arsenal are playing about par. And I would be inclined to agree with them. I think they overachieved for several years.
Are they the England of the Premier League? Is that what you're saying?
No, when have England overachieved?
When have England overachieved? Some way back, but it's enough for the fans to keep expecting that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. You know, it's like say, Wenger arrived in England and he had all these new ideas and which no other managers ever applied, and they worked for a while for him, and now other managers have caught up in terms of diet and stuff like that. Not Wenger's specific diet, but the diet he foists upon his team. You know, and in much the same way as, say, the English brought cricket the West Indies, and it was played on the plantations, and then the natives began playing it and soon got better at cricket than the English were. I think the same thing might be happening now with Arsenal. But I don't think they're particularly underachieving. Obviously, they should beat sides like Bradford, but in terms of their
great
league position...
Great for Bradford that they didn't.
Yeah, but in terms of their league position, I'd say fourth is about par.
I have to say, I slightly disagree with the casting there of Arsenal as on par. I mean, they are one of the most storied clubs in English football. They do have a 60,000 capacity stadium. They are a massive club. That they can't compete with the oil money is one thing. But you look at what Fergie's managed to do with, admittedly, a bit more revenue ticking around globally, but also sucked out by the Glazers, and he's kept them up competing. I think your second point is bang on, that some of the advantages they had 10 years ago they don't have anymore. But they've also made mistakes, and that he's never... The fact is, he has not replaced Steve Bould, Martin Keown, Tony Adams, and that's a fundamental problem that's to do with him and not necessarily to do with other teams
and
catching up.
Not replacing Steve Bould looks as if it might be a problem for a second time now.
Well, right, it's a fair point you make. That's enough Arsenal chat, though. Chelsea chat, Paul McInnes.
Yes.
How about that Chelsea-Monterrey 3-1 win?
Yeah, it was a good win for Chelsea. It wasn't much of a game, wasn't particularly competitive. Monterrey seemed to be ambling for the majority of the game. There was a very intensive 5-10 minute spell after half time in which Chelsea extended the lead from 1-0 to 3-0, and all of their goals involved some nice play by the forward four.
Let's talk talking points. Talking point one. Luiz not in the back four, further upfield.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting decision, and I think that there was the talk when he was bought originally with Scolari that he might be able to do that.
Right, because he certainly can't do the other stuff, surely.
Well, I still think about the semi-finals of the Champions League and the final of the Champions League where he was like a rock. I think it just depends on getting him in the right mental space. But he obviously has the ability to be able to create space in tight positions. And his distribution is effective. So, you know, he had a good game, but not against stiff competition.
Talking point two, the trio of Brio, if you like, the Oscar, Hazard and the Mata, they're playing together and very, very well.
Yeah, they play very well. I mean, my personal take on the three of them is obviously Mata is class. I really love Oscar. Not too sure about Hazard, but I can't... He seems to me to be dipping in and out of games and a lot of his stuff is non-essential.
Is it like a boy band of, you know, exquisite touches? There's one for everybody there.
I would love to have an exquisite touch, but sadly, they're miles away from me. But Hazard contributed very well to the second goal, the really pacey run.
So, who's your favourite of that special group? If you had to pick one of Oscar, Hazard and Mata to spend an evening with...
What would we be doing?
Playing football. You can play football if you like. Which is your favourite? Come on, we've all got a favourite of the three. Mine's Oscar.
Yeah, mine's Oscar. About
mine is Oscar as well.
You're right.
But I think if it all depends on what we were going to be doing in the evening. If we were going to the pub, I think I wouldn't go with any of the three of them. I'd go with David Luiz.
All right. Yeah, fair enough.
I think I preferred Hazard just because he's such a maverick, and he is useless on occasion, but when he's good, he can be just incredibly good.
All right. Talking point three. Paul, what is talking point three?
Talking point three, the defence is under Benitez is not bombing forward as much. It's not as kind of crucial to the contribution of width. So you don't see Ashley Cole, for example, or as... I'm not even going to try and pronounce his name, kind of getting...
Azpilicueta?
Yes.
Is that it? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Getting as forward as much.
Right.
And
is there no Torres talking point this week?
Torres talking point... I mean, Torres...
It doesn't have to be. I'm quite happy not to have one.
He scored the deflected goal. Yeah. He mixed in well. He appears to be happier with the ball getting more directly to him.
It was his pass that went beautifully across the goal to the
lovely
third.
Pass, yeah.
Well, his build-up, his involvement in the build-up to the Mata goal, the opening goal, was excellent. It showed a lot of confidence. A lot of people questioning his confidence, self-belief, but he certainly showed it there. Can I just mention that Mata has now scored on his Premier League, FA Cup, Champions League and Club World Cup debuts for Chelsea. Remarkable.
Do you think if Chelsea win this tournament, will their supporters be in any way satisfied, or do they just consider it an irrelevant distraction like many of the English football writers seem to dismiss it?
I'd really like to know the opinions of the Chelsea fans who've gone to Yokohama. I wonder how different the away support think about Benitez as opposed to
Well, it was interesting that they were still singing "There's Only One Di Matteo" in 16 minutes into the game. Well, coincidentally enough, we're about 16 minutes into today's podcast. So let's take a little bit of a musical sting, and then we'll discuss the team that's awaiting Chelsea in the final on Sunday, Corinthians. Part two, and joining us now on the line, global, and if you want to put a limit on it, we'll say global football expert, Jonathan Wilson. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Excellent news. Chelsea taking on Corinthians this Sunday morning, as I'm sure you're aware. What kind of challenge do you think they'll be facing there?
I think a pretty serious challenge. I mean, I think for one thing, Corinthians are taking this very seriously. They've taken huge numbers of fans over to Japan. And I think generally South American teams take this tournament more seriously than European teams. But I think Corinthians, particularly this year, it's a centenary year to year Socrates died. It'd be a perfect end for what's already been a great year for them. So, yeah, absolutely no question, this will be a full-strength Corinthians team. They will absolutely be going for it.
In terms of posing Chelsea threats, any players we should be particularly watching out for?
I think actually with Corinthians, the thing is that it is the team unit that Chiche's created. I mean, they were accused of being very defensive when they won the league title last year. A lot of 1-0 wins. That's certainly how they won the Libertadores. And I think it's not coincidence that they beat Al Ahly 1-0 in the semi-final. I don't think they're quite as good at the back as they were. They've lost Leandro Castan, who's gone to Roma. Paolo Andrea's come in. I don't think he's quite such a good player. If you look at their league form this season, they only finished sixth. And although they only let in, I think it was just over a goal a game, but they weren't as secure as they have been. And they have changed shapes. Like they did play almost a strikerless formation with the two centre-forwards pulling wide. They signed Paul Guerrero, the Peruvian, who was at Bayern briefly and was at Hamburg for a long time, 6 or 7 years. And he gives them quite a muscular focal point up front, but it does mean that they play a 4-2-3-1. I think it's made them maybe a little bit more predictable. So, I don't think they're quite as good as they would have been if Chelsea had been playing them 6 months ago, but defensively very sound still.
Brilliant. Okay. Jonathan, in other news, we're doing Secret Santa in the pod, and I'm not sure what to get Barry. I know he loves football books. I'm wondering if you have any recommendations.
Well, you could always get, funny you should ask, you could always get my new book, The Outsider, A History of the Goalkeeper, which came out last week.
Right.
I don't think it's right at Barry Street. I think it's exactly the kind of thing you'd enjoy.
Would you enjoy that, Barry?
No, I think you should get me something else.
You could get a business subscription, which you can get from my website, www.theblizzard.co.uk.
I had a Blizzard subscription, and it ran out, actually, and I never renewed it.
That was an ideal Christmas gift. Or you could get a T-shirt from the Blizzard website as well.
Yeah, well, there you go. What kind of T-shirt?
Maybe the paperback of my Clough biography, if you haven't got that.
No one ever says thank you, which would be ever so appropriate in this
Whatever
case.
You do, don't get me inverting the pyramid.
Right. Why not?
Because I don't think I'd like it.
Oh, I think you would, Barry.
Do you?
I've read that.
All right.
Yeah. You could have had more pictures in it, but the only thing I'd say, Jonathan, a few more pictures. But anyway, marvellous stuff. Well, do enjoy the festive period if we don't speak to you before, Jonathan. And many thanks.
Thank you very much. Some of them got two good games, actually. We got City on Boxing Day and Tottenham on the 29th. So that'll liven things up between Christmas and New Year.
Certainly will. Certainly will. Well, many happy returns. No. Many...
Felicitations, Jonathan, I think is what James is trying to say. He's having a shocker today.
Yeah.
An absolute shocker. I don't think he's been this bad in a pod since the day he came up home from Paris after being up all night with his muso chums in the National.
Yeah, that's right. Although they might be somewhat puzzled by that description. good. Right, Jonathan, many, many thanks.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, thanks.
And you too. I tell you who won't be having a happy Christmas. The players of Tigres, after the appalling treatment they received in Brazil. A lot of people talking about this, especially with a view of the World Cup coming up in Brazil. And Wednesday at the Murumbi Stadium in Sao Paulo, the second leg of the Copa Sudamericana final, which, Barry, I think I'm right in saying is like the South American version of the Europa League.
Except it's good.
How can you say that, Barry? Cheap stereotype peddling Barry. But anyway, do tell us what happened.
Well,
in a South American accent.
I won't make you suffer through that. But basically, Argentina side Tigre have accused Brazilian police of terrorizing them to such an extent that they wouldn't come out for the second half of a game. They were losing 2-0 against Sao Paulo. There were iron bars, policemen pulling guns on players, but apparently pressing them to their heads and chests and whatnot. Pictures emerged of blood-stained dressing room floors and walls, and it was all very unpleasant. And in a week where there has been a lot of media hand-wringing about, you know, plummeting standards in English football grounds, it sort of gives us a wee bit of perspective about, you know, just how bad things can get.
Extraordinary. It's a two-legged affair, this final. They'd drawn 0-0 in the game at the Bombonera, and rather gracefully, Sao Paulo had banned Tigres from actually training at the stadium, the Morumbi. The security forces were kind of out there trying to stop the players coming out on the pitch. They had to try and dodge around them and jump over the advertising hoardings to get on the pitch just to have a bit of a warm-up. This is before the game. And then, well, there was a bit of suggestions from the Brazilians that they'd really been laying it on a bit thick and having a bit of a physical approach to the game, the Argentines. And certainly the scorer of the first goal then got a bloody nose shortly before half-time. There was a bit of dust up in the tunnel, and then all this police business happened.
My favourite comment of the whole thing was from the president of the winning team, Sao Paulo president Juvenal Juvencio, who told his club's website, "Our biggest victory is the fact that the Argentines ran away."
Right, I don't know why we're laughing about that, because it's a shocking story. And one imagines that the AFA will be launching some kind of a bid to get this this result, this disqualified, revoked, whatever. Because as it stands, the referee blew the whistle after 45 minutes when Tigres didn't come out. So the result stands as 2-0, and they've been off celebrating the fact that they've now won the Copa Sudamericana.
Well, it's the kind of thing, if it happened over here, there'd be outrage. But because it happens in South America, we were all allowed to have a good laugh at it.
Excellent news. If you're curious to know what the Argentines and the Brazilians think about all that and what pipoqueiro means, then do click on my paper review, which has gone all South American this week. We've got that and other Brazilian stadium madness on Friday morning in the paper review. Good. Now, next up, back to the parochial quaint old Premier League. Well, there's all sorts of action coming up this weekend. What are your mob up to? Norwich, who are they playing?
I'm going to see us take on the mighty Latics.
Oh, yeah, the Wigan.
Carra. Yes, indeed.
Right. And are you still reeling from that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting game. After this, we've got West Brom away and then Chelsea and Man City at home. So after our amazing run of unbeaten, if we don't kind of...
That amazing run of unbeaten, as you so correctly put it, which culminated an extraordinary victory away at Swansea, then came to a grinding halt at home to Aston Villa midweek.
Yeah, it was. I kind of felt it was. I've gone on a great run of kind of trusting my gut and predicting Norwich results, and I did think we might get turned over by the magic man Lambert.
Right.
He, it's reading all the Villa fan boards and stuff. They seem to be right behind this project. They're really into this a young, hard running side. But what they had was a bit of finishing ability. In Vyman and Benteke. And Benteke is increasingly unplayable as he finds his feet in this
unplayable,
league.
Unplayable. There's that word again.
Yeah, I think he's a tough customer. But you know, has a good bit of technical ability about him as well. Anyway, Norwich, I think a lot of fans will be hoping for and perhaps even expecting 3 points against Wigan, and that could be problematic.
Let's talk a little bit about Aston Villa and Benteke and that mob, because they're involved in that big... They themselves aren't, but they are an influential factor on the battle for fourth this week. You mentioned before, John, the fact that Arsenal only 2 points off the top four positions. At present, you've got Chelsea in third, 29, 3 points behind them. Everton, Spurs and West Brom, three teams on 26, 2 points behind them. Arsenal, 24, Liverpool... We're only 4 points off the top four. They are at home to Aston Villa. Liverpool looking increasingly solid.
Yeah, but then so did Villa. I think after they shipped eight in against Manchester clubs back in November, and since then they've only conceded one in four.
Oof.
They're an increasingly interesting team, I think Villa. Sorry, you know you wanted to get me onto Liverpool there.
No, actually I'm very happy because there's a different setup. They've got a couple of holding midfielders and three at the back with wing backs as well. Is that right?
Yeah, and you look at that first 11 and you sort of wonder where, you know, it doesn't look the strongest, but I think they've got a pretty solid strong squad now because of the amount of games that the sort of young kids that they've had have played over the last couple of seasons through necessity as much as anything. It means that when he does rotate, he's got decent players to bring in. I think only one player has played every league game this season, and that's Matt Loughton, the right back. So yeah, they've rotated well, and I mean, I know they're still in a pretty dire place in the league, but
that place being specifically 17th, only goal difference outside the bottom three.
I'm just going to agree with John there. I think that's right. I think you look at them and it's very much a team, and there's not anybody they would lose if they didn't have in a team. And there's lots of people who would come into the side and you wouldn't notice the change. That's quite a good place to be.
For example, Fabian Delph was in for Barry Bannon the other night and did very well, may well keep his place. You know, I think it's interesting what Paul said earlier about Villa fans really getting behind the project, because I think that's because what they had under Alex McLeish was just so bad that any glimmer of hope, you know, and they will be prepared to be patient,
right?
Because and perhaps that's something they could think about introducing at Arsenal. You know, send Wenger away on a Guardiola style year long sabbatical, bring in McLeish for a season. Once he's worked his magic, Arsenal fans will be absolutely praying for the return of the professor.
It's right. Actually interesting that I think that's the same mindset that Liverpool fans have right now. Actually, they all kind of they know they're underperforming, and they know that they you know they wish their team was higher up the league, but they are trusting in the coach to develop the side and leave them better than where they were.
Right. Well, I have to say, Aston Villa fans might need a bit of patience. They could well find themselves in the bottom three this weekend, because Liverpool, they've got Suarez back. They themselves are fresh from a morale-boosting win at West Ham. Interesting to see as well that all that talk of an Ince deal for Thomas Ince being pretty much sorted, and Sturridge, Daniel Sturridge as well. That's all set to happen now.
What? How much did they let Ince go for in the first place?
Yeah, good shout.
Well, it's not going to enhance or do anything for Liverpool's reputation as a bit of a joke club at the moment, if they're letting Tom Ince go from their youth setup and then buying him back for
Dick. Except that when they let him go, they had a 35% sell-on clause in there. So the more money they pay to Blackpool for him, the more they'll get back.
It'd be quite interesting to know, actually, but perhaps people can post below the line, because I really think the biggest kind of loss on a player having sold them and then bought them back again.
The biggest profit, which... Oh, no, yeah. No, I don't know.
So you sold a club who sold them on really cheaply and then had to fork out a great deal to get them back in.
Would it be... Oh, no, I haven't got anything.
I'm not entirely sure. No. I know United did it with Clive Mendonca years and years ago. But
right.
Yeah, I'm going to hazard a guess that it might... Portsmouth, Spurs and Harry Redknapp might be involved
PNR was the opposite though, no? Because they sold him and then got money to get him back.
Oh, yeah, it's the other way around, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So no, got nothing on that. All right, listeners, that one's down to you. Interesting. In other battle for fourth news, of course, Stoke are going to be hosting Everton, Fortress Britannia there. That'll be a game of big men, won't it? Big Marrow and Fellaini, big Stoke, that line.
Another test for Everton, just as the narrative starts going, you know, they're pulling it out. They've got a very important win against Spurs. Another tough test.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be like a fight scene from Transformers. massive machines crashing together in midair.
Wow, cool. I doubt it'll be that exciting.
A very low budget
Transformers, if you've ever seen it.
Yeah. Spurs-Swansea, a very different style of football, perhaps, at White Hart Lane. As Swansea reeling themselves from that defeat at home to Norwich last time.
Yeah, they had a very good, very strong second half, though, against us, and they proved that, you know, even if people, I think they were caught out, they're allowed or permitted, they weren't mentally kind of focused for the game, but they still had dominated the second half and scored some goals, had lots of chances. It was
Right. That Michu, he's unplayable, isn't he?
Well, is he? Because he's not like he just pops up in space, whereas somebody like Benteke, he's fighting somebody all the time.
Oh, that's unplayable.
Yeah,
okay.
you can't kind of knock him off the ball.
Right, they of course had a win midweek against Middlesbrough, so they're through to the semi-finals of the League Cup. Very exciting. How do you see that one going, Barry's Bones?
Tottenham Swansea.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's a really hard one to call. I wouldn't be surprised what way it went.
Spurs and
usually,
win, isn't it?
Usually when I can't decide, I just plump for a draw, and that may well happen.
All right. In my miscellaneous collection, we've got West Brom, West Ham. Mm. And, of course, is that it for the fourth? Oh, Arsenal, that's already. We've done them, yeah.
Newcastle City,
QPR, Fulham. Well, that's in the next section there. Oh,
West Brom, West Ham, very interesting game. Though,
oh, go on, then, why?
I think West Brom...
They're both called West. That's quite remarkable.
Exactly. It's the West... something derby, yep. And then they West Brom
Wild West derby.
West Brom are out of form.
Yep.
Three defeats on the trot.
Are they?
But anyway, West Brom are a bit out of form.
Yep.
West Ham are, you know, got turned over at home by Liverpool. It'll be interesting if one of those two teams comes out winners. It'll be quite interesting because again, they're in that mix of two to four points off fourth place as well.
Well, that is true. Although, yeah. Okay, although people don't really consider them as being
no, and probably, you know, look at the squads, perhaps not. But I think if you're looking at a surprise top six finisher, those two appear to be the strongest candidates at the moment.
Right. And Stoke and Swansea there are equally alongside Liverpool. So
And Norwich.
And Norwich are there as well, are they? Yeah. Good for you. Okay, down to the next section, which is entitled Battle at the Bottom, Stroke Battle at the Top. because you got Newcastle. Hey, if they lose this, they could be in the bottom three. They're at home to Man City. Newcastle only 2 points clear of the bottom three. They've lost five of their last six domestic fixtures. City, meanwhile, have a lot of pressure on them to get a result after things went badly for them in the derby.
They did, yeah. All Newcastle's wins this season have all come at home at St James's. But they're struggling to score. And City, although they've had their issues, they have looked, you know, reasonably solid at the back in domestic football, at least. And yeah, I think that probably offers a decent opportunity to bounce back.
Do you think that selling Demba Ba will be a good thing for Newcastle in a weird way?
Are they selling him?
Well, I mean, if they've got that 7.5 million clause and Liverpool might be still...
He's the only fellow who scores goals for them, isn't he?
But then you put Cisse back in the centre-forward role again. I mean, it appears to be they've got two guys who want to play number nine and they can only ever play one of them at
There can
any
be
time.
Only one.
Yeah.
Right.
Because of that formation. Oh. Maybe it might be a blessing in disguise.
Possibly. Or you could sell Cisse and keep the one who scores goals.
Yeah, true.
Newcastle also have players coming back from injury who sort of featured against Fulham. Hatem Ben Arfa will surely help because he's a very gifted player and scored a marvellous goal.
He didn't last the full 90, I think, against Fulham. There's a hope that he might be have a little bit more game in him this time.
More game?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah,
as in they're feeding him pheasants.
Be an interesting approach.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but Newcastle's decline this season is worrying, and it doesn't show any sign of being arrested anytime soon.
Right, says the Sunderland fan with a smile on his face. Interestingly, on that same Manchester northeast axis, you've got Man United, Sunderland contemporaneously this weekend. Sunderland now only 1 point clear of the drop, despite a whopping 3-0 win over Reading.
Yeah, I didn't see that game because I was out wetting baby Bukowski's head on Tuesday night. Guinness and whiskey.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So basically, Bukowski's first action upon becoming a father for the first time was to get hideously drunk.
Right. Cool. Well, it's not like he'd have to get up early the next morning or anything.
Well, he did, yeah.
Yeah. Right, Sunderland beat Reading. There's no Lee Catamol or Wes Brown for this.
And Danny Rose is also a doubt, and he's been arguably Sunderland's best player this season. He's on loan from Spurs.
What, even better than Stephen Fletcher in his pain-killing injection and his wonderful back-heel goal?
Well, that was a bit special.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. All right.
And Adam Johnson's also a doubt, and Nemanja Vidic will probably be back for Manchester United. So I suspect that Manchester United will win that game very easily.
All right. Nice to see Martin O'Neill looking a little bit more animated again on the sideline, though.
I mean, I don't think his job was in any doubt, but he has bought himself time if it was needed with that convincing win over Reading.
Maybe he's got his self-confidence back.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Well, that's enough for part two. Many thanks to Paul McKinney's, because you're out of here.
Yeah, sorry,
you're going to pull a Tigres on us. You're not going to come out for the next part.
That's right, and I'm going to be escorted out of the premises by policemen with a weapon.
He thinks he's joking, listeners. Anyway, lovely. Many thanks for stopping by. Happy Christmas,
Paul. Sorry, it's
Paul.
Not longer. Yes, to you. Actually, I think I'm back next Thursday.
But
so
you say that. Never. Anyway, I'm moving on. We've got part three coming up in a second with posts and tweets. And, a bit of Sid as well. Right. Well, excitingly... John Ashdown, producer Ben, who's off on holiday at the moment, he invited questions for you from the listeners, and they've responded in drove. I would say droves, but there's only, I think, three of them.
Okay, hit me.
All right. JMG18892 says, to John Ashdown, will Crystal Palace maintain their promotion push? You're like the lower league Jonathan Wilson, really, aren't you? That's how they see you.
I guess that's how,
not
that's
Premier League
how
guru.
I'm perceived.
Yeah, that's your shtick. Mm. Well, let's roll with that then. Anyway, will Crystal Palace maintain their promotion push and care to give some love to Glenn Murray? He lists a lot of players. Yeah, Glenn Murray, Miller Jedinak, am I right? Damien Delaney, Kagiso, oh, for goodness sake, Yannick Bolasie, all of whom have been superb this year, yet are barely mentioned because of all the attention on Wilf. Saha, I know that one.
Yeah, no, and I think the key guy in there is Jedinak. He was an Australian sort of deep-lying central midfielder who they got from Turkey in 2011, summer 2011. And he's just a very calming influence on the side. And all those names listed, people like Glenn Murray, who they signed again in 2011, had a really slow season last year, scored 18 and 17 this year. Bolasie was, I think, Bristol City's young player of the year. But, you know, these are all kind of... Nobody was kind of fighting, perhaps, over these players. And the way that they've gelled together has been impressive. It does help, though, although they have got that fantastic individual in Zaha, because he attracts... He creates space for the rest of the team by just attracting two or three players to him. So by having that great individual talent, it really does help the collective.
How likely is it that he'll be moving on, possibly to Arsenal, I don't know, in January? And if he did, how much of a dent would that put in their aforementioned promotion push?
It would be huge if he did leave. Although all the noise is coming out of Palace is that they don't want to sell him and don't need to sell him.
Okay.
And he'll be staying on. But yeah, I mean, if they keep him, the top two's a real possibility for them. If he goes, then then you'd put them in with the rest of the sort of playoff melee.
Right, okay.
Have you heard the chant, the Glenn Murray chant?
You have to enlighten me,
Patrick. Well, basically, Murray used to play for Brighton, who are huge rivals of Crystal Palace. And
they're both avian types, aren't they? You've got your eagles and seagulls, of course.
No such thing as a seagull.
It's just a gull. Right. Anyway, back to your story, Barry.
Yeah. Well, Glenn Murray, there's a YouTube clip of Glenn Murray scoring for Brighton against Palace, and some guy near whoever's recording it on their phone goes, "Oh, for sake, Murray." And now this kind of went viral, and now whenever Murray scores for Palace, the big shout around the stands is, "Oh, for F's sake, Murray." It's rather amusing.
Right. Cool. Laurie Innes says, "I'm an AFC Bournemouth fan, so quite biased on this. But Eddie Howe's return to the Cherries is still going fantastically. We've got an embarrassing chairman who starts fights with reporters and swears on Five Live. A Russian co-owner called Maxim Denim. His wife's quite funny as well. Do you remember when she gave the team talk? Anyway, and David Blooming Calamity James not complaining." There's no question in that, but she's just happy about... it might be a man, actually, because Laurie's sometimes a man's name.
Yeah, like Hugh Laurie.
Well, yeah, but that's his surname.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
the League One.
Sorry, Laurie.
Promotion.
Your moment's been ruined by that. They.
Yeah. There's a big game at the top of League One this weekend is Tranmere Sheffield United, who are. It's a big top of the table clash,
right,
between the fast starting Tranmere and the kind of slow burning, quite boring Sheffield United side, who should really be running away with it, but just sort of grinding it out down there.
Right, that's Sheffield United and Tranmere. You haven't mentioned Bournemouth.
Yeah, because I don't really.
Funny, there was some sort of famous analogy involving, say, I don't know, a hare and some slow moving creature with a shell on its back.
A bird, perhaps.
Snail.
Hagen88 says, "Question for John Ashton. John, do you know the statistics regarding the chances of a team at the bottom of the Championship at New Year being able to stay up? The shambles I watch at Bristol City are fourth bottom." He goes on at some length about this. How many have escaped from such a position? If you're bottom at New Year, how likely is it that you drop?
Oh, blimey, that is a tough question. It's a good job I've got all those stats in my head.
Okay.
Don't mean to, John. I could pretend to be literally the Jonathan Wilson, just list them all.
Well, what do you think about Bristol City's chances, or do you just want to talk about Sheffield United?
No.
And Tranmere again?
Well, Bristol City are one of the four teams at the bottom that are looking slightly cut adrift, and you have to go back all the way on. If you're bottom, as the chimes ring out on New Year's Eve, for the last, let me count these up: 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. You have to go back 11 seasons. To Crewe in 2000-2001, who were bottom. Everybody else since then who was bottom on New Year's Eve was relegated, but Crewe back then were bottom on New Year's Day morning, and they finished 14th. So there's hope as long as you're Crewe.
I have to say, John, that was an astonishing performance.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Right, okay, what have we got left? It's a quick mention for Serie A, and a quick mention for Ligue 1, because they've been playing games every day this week in France. They love their football over there. The net result is that Lyon, who were running away with it previously, are now only 3 points ahead of PSG. Why is that so interesting? Because this Sunday evening, Paris Saint-Germain, 3 points behind Olympique Lyon, will be hosting OL there at the Parc des Princes. Boy, If I was sitting at home, I know I'd tune in for that, but I won't be sitting at home because I'll be doing that one on ESPN. Straight after I do Juve's game, which is at Atalanta, I think, or might be at home to them. But anyway, that's not the big game in Italy this week. That is Lazio against Inter, and that's a big game. Lazio, I think, fourth. Inter are second behind Juve, and that's a whopper. Nick Christie says, surely a mention on today's pod for Udinese's lone fan and what he's received. Fantastic story. You saw the photos, I'm sure. Great, wasn't it?
A lone Udinese fan on standing alone on the terrace or yeah. in the away end. Apparently the Genoa staff or stewards asked him if he wanted to, you know, sit in the stand. He insisted on being in the away end.
Good for him. Yeah. So, it's a magnificent photo.
Am I right in thinking he hadn't actually travelled there especially for the game?
He just said he was in town on business.
Yeah.
And he did think, he said that Udinese don't bring a lot of travelling supporters with them, but I did think there'd be five or six others, so I was a bit surprised when I came in. And then when the rest of the stadium started booing and insulting me, I was quite offended. Well, you would be, wouldn't you, really? Because it gets a bit personal if it's only you.
Yeah, you can't sort of pretend to look around at who they're pointing at. Yeah.
Or raise a chant back or anything. But then he said everyone was very lovely. They gave him wine and they invited him for coffee and stuff, and they've given him tickets to see the game. I think they gave him a Genoa shirt as well. Anyway, lovely story.
Well, the least number of fans I've ever seen, or away fans at a game, was I was at a Barcelona Depor a few years ago, and there was, I think, 14 Depor fans at it.
Right.
And then I was at Luton Forest Green once, and there was possibly less than that. Definitely less than 20 Forest right. Green fans in the away end of Kenilworth Road.
But more than one?
More than one,
More
yeah.
than one. Okay. Ooh, Juventus Drogba. That's a big headline on this morning's Gazetta. More on that, perhaps, in the Friday paper review. Good. Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello.
Hey, how about that? It's Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hi, Sid. Where are you?
I'm standing alongside a football pitch watching my team lose. I think we're losing 2-0. We just had our best player sent off.
Which team is this, Sid?
It's the team of foreign journalists in Madrid.
All right. We just had
our best player sent off, who just happened to be our token Spaniard.
All right.
I think he might have shat on the referee's prostitute mother.
Oh, how is Felipe Maria Ricci doing? Is he playing?
He is playing in his goggles. He hasn't played for ages. He's making a comeback in the last game before Christmas.
Right. How many other teams are you playing at the same time?
What do you mean by how many other teams? Wait, one, obviously.
Just well, it's not. Oh,
I see. It's not
three-sided.
Sorry, I see. Yeah. It's not three-sided football. It's just one team we're playing at the moment, and they're a bunch of bankers as well.
Hey, oh, Bants. Lovely. Listen, Sid. That's not
did
the only.
Did you just say the word Bants?
Yes, he did.
Now get out now. Go on.
Now, Sid, that's not the only top football that's taking place this week in Spain, etc., and so on. Because also you had Copa del Rey? Is it
Copa del Rey this week? Yeah.
And Real got beat.
Yeah, they did. Real Madrid were beaten 2-1 in Vigo by Celta last night, and it was strange. I thought was the reaction of Mourinho afterwards. And Mourinho is a coach, as we all know, who when he feels that it's the right thing to do. Doesn't have a problem with having a go at his players, doesn't have a problem with pointing the finger and making excuses and so on. But what was interesting about his press conference yesterday is that he rambled so much. His eyes looked lost. It was almost as if he sort of didn't really know what to say. And so the two or three attacks he'd made on his players somehow felt less stage managed than normal. It felt as if they just kind of came out in the ramble. And it was quite interesting and slightly disconcerting because it was a Mourinho that, I must admit, I don't think I've seen before.
It's interesting that they've now had more defeats this season than they had in all of last season in total.
Yeah, and Mourinho had 6 defeats already, which is more going into Christmas than Mourinho's had at any of his clubs at any stage in his career.
Right. Now, the other big news, of course, is the fact that there's a Leo Messi and scoring goals shocker once again.
Yeah, 2 goals. I really hope I haven't got this statistic wrong.
Hmm.
The last 7 games Lionel Messi has started, he scored 2 times in each of them.
Wow.
Pretty good going, isn't it?
So are we on? Is it 88 we're on now for the year?
We're on 88 now, yeah.
All right. But of course, now all these other massive goal scorers in one year have started coming out of the woodwork because Zambia have got Godfrey Chitalu.
Yeah.
Yeah. 107 goals in 1972 were not officially recognised, but the Zambian FA are sending their people through the records and they're going to present
it. Well, they've done it already, apparently. I read a quote this morning from someone at the Zambian FA saying... saying we've got the records now, and the results are astonishing. I think the quote is something along the line of, the results are astonishing. We've got the records match by match and goal by goal, and we're going to pass them on to FIFA.
That's lovely, isn't it? Chitalo, who scored the goals in at least four domestic competitions and also played for Zambia's national team, went on to become the national coach and died, of course, in that horrible crash in 1993 when their plane... went down near Gabon after playing
at, on the coast of Gabon. Yeah.
But he's not the only one, because now Flamengo have said, "Hang on a second, Zico scored 89 in 1979."
Jimbo, did Flamengo really say, "Hang on a minute"? Oh, hang on a second. I really hope so. And were there any caveats to their argument?
Am I right
in thinking? Forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think the Zico one might include a series of friendlies.
That's right. But legally, they're correct. They say because FIFA have accepted their record of unbeaten games, which is in the Museum of Football, more than 50 games. They don't say how many in this, but they say since you accepted those friendlies as being part of the record of unbeaten matches in a row, consecutive, etc., you have to accept the goals that were scored within them, which takes Zico to, what is that now, 89.
Well, then Messi's only one behind with two games to go then.
Well,
so Messi
might
actually break that one.
He might even break Chitalo's.
The Chitalo story is... I mean, I'm glad that you use the word lovely. I think the Chitalo story is a really, really, really nice one. And I think one of the things that's been... I mean, in Spain over the last 4 days, Chitalo's become a huge thing. I mean, you can even buy Chitalo T-shirts now. And as you can imagine, the kind of the drive to recognise Chitalo has been pushed by Madrid fans and a reasonable part of the Madrid media. And that's the thing that sort of makes it feel all a bit uncomfortable, is it's kind of so self-interested. It's not about Chitalo at all. It's about trying to ruin Messi's record for him. Now, obviously, if Chitalo has got this record, it's a great story. It's great that we hear about this, and it's great that people find out about a player that 4 days ago they hadn't heard of.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And
very
those
good
images, by the way, the images of the current Zambia team going to the coast of Gabon and who, of course, won the African Nations Cup and honouring the team from 1993 that died on the coast, those images are stunning.
Mm. Sid, anything else happening this weekend? What's the big game in the Liga?
Well, there's the really big one, first against second. Sunday night, Barcelona against Atletico Madrid.
Wow, so that's Messi against Falcao.
Yep, Falcao, who scored five last weekend.
We'll be betting on unders on that one, Barry, yeah?
Sid, just from listening to you over the years, any time Atletico Madrid go into a big game, I have no faith in them whatsoever. Do you think they've any chance of winning?
No, from listening to you over the years, Sid, I can tell, Barry, that they always give Madrid, what is it, 9 points a year, all the games they play against them and all the points they take off Barca. So that'll be, what, 12?
Yeah,
12 a year.
From listening to me over the years, what Barry's really done is develop an amazing ability to draw, which is pretty impressive.
Right.
Now, the thing with Atletico Madrid is that you know they're going to blow up when they play, exactly as you say, the 9 points thing. You know they're going to blow up when they play against Real Madrid, but they tend not to blow up quite so bad against Barcelona. Traditionally, they've had reasonably good results against Barcelona, but normally in Madrid, not at the Camp Nou. Have they got a chance? Given the way that they play on the break, that they're very, very effective. They don't create very many chances, but they tend to take them. I think they can cause Barcelona one or two problems. Of course, Barcelona are favourites, and I suspect Barcelona will win, but I think it's a game where... It's one of those where you genuinely think, hey, this might be worth watching.
Mm. Oh, Barcelona's defence against El Tigre. That's got to be interesting,
yeah, but
isn't it?
To be fair to Barcelona's defence, it's not the shambles it was. And earlier in the season when we were laughing about what shambles it was, I think to some extent there was perhaps a failure to recognise that they had virtually none of their full first-choice defenders available. I think if Puyol and Piqué are both fit, they are a defence that's open because of the nature of the way they play, but they're not intrinsically a bad defence.
Right. Sid, many, many thanks. Look forward to that game on Sunday and catching up with you next week.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Thanks, Sid. And good luck with the game.
Thank you.
Bye.
Is Sid not playing in that game?
Apparently not.
He must be. Is he suspended? Knacked?
Well, we didn't ask him, did we?
I don't. Why is there an on about Barcelona?
Yeah. Never mind. Well, that's it. I don't know if there's anything else, John, you wanted to throw out there. No?
Don't
what are you up
so
to tonight after your recent...
Tonight's five-a-side tonight.
Less, is it?
Less cultural.
Right.
One of our players has pulled out...
It's homoerotic five-a-side. Well, common regard, bog standard five-a-side.
Usually it's when I'm involved. But right. Yeah, one of our players has pulled out because he has hurt his back reaching for a toothbrush this morning, apparently.
Right.
Stick that on the list of comedy football injuries.
Where was the toothbrush?
There's an afternoon email in that one.
All right. Good. Okay, well, that's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. As I mentioned, I think there is the paper review up, possibly with a bit of Messi reaction too in it, on Friday morning. So do join us for that. Otherwise, we'll be back on Monday. Are you doing a minute by minute this weekend, Barry?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. But anyway, do have a super weekend. And you, you too, John. And you too, guest producer Matt Hill. And you too, listener. See you on Monday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.